This week's episode of This Is Only a Test is brought to you by Huawei's MateBook X Pro, winner of 27 global awards and now comes with Windows Hello. Unlock your Huawei MateBook X Pro with a touch of your fingerprint, secure, fast, and no passwords to remember. And for a limited time, get a free $300 gift card with purchase. Visit a Microsoft store near you today.
Hey, let's start the show.
For Thursday, June 14th, 2018, happy Flag Day. Welcome to This Is Only a Test, the official podcast of Tested.com. Welcome, everyone, to the E3, not at E3, episode of This Is Only a Test. E3's going on right now, still.
Mm. It's still going on?
I think it's still going on. We're not even there.
Mm-mm.
We were there. We came back. Hey, is that our top story this week?
Oh, my gosh.
How you guys doing? How you guys doing?
I'm well. Jeremy? I'm well. I survived E3 with you and Joey. I'm proud of us.
I'm doing great. The summer's here. My son's out of school.
Mm-hmm.
Went on vacation.
Kids are out of school.
Yeah, you did. You went up to the mountains. You went off the grid.
Off the grid, except there was great Wi-Fi.
Oh, no. Not really off the grid.
So that's pretty on the grid.
Yeah, very gritty. Yeah, very gritty.
Mm. When was that?
Just this past weekend. I went up to this.
I thought you were on the podcast last week.
Arnold, California.
Did you attend the Warriors Championship Parade?
I did not.
Oh.
I did not go to any parades because I was watching the Washington Capitals bender from winning the Stanley Cup.
Yeah. Where they went on both the Capitals and the Warriors.
I still think Alex Ovechkin is drunk right now.
Wow.
A
week
later.
Player. Yeah. Vegas Knights, good team, first year. And didn't the Capitals also buy a big newspaper ad congratulating them on a great first year?
They did.
Very classy move. Very, very classy.
Did you go to the Warriors parade?
I was down in L.A. for E3, which is happens to be
top story this week.
It's E3. Whew. Okay, so this is gonna be interesting. We were down in LA for literally one day. It's how we cover E3. E3 is a sprawling week-long, more than a week-long event if you count all the outside E3, still E3 events. That and press conferences, people have really been following since, I guess it was Saturday was the first big press conference with EA.
Mm-hmm.
And the show floor opened on Tuesday.
By the way, boo on that EA press conference. Terrible.
Oh, yeah. Well, let's talk about, we're going to talk about all the details, but people covering video game news, and there are a lot of people there right now, and a lot of friends of ours, are there the entire week. We used to do that. Jeremy used to be in LA for a week when you were at PC Gamer.
Yeah. Gosh, those were the days, man. Like, that was when I was just starting out as games journalist, and there was the new Nintendo consoles and all the great energy. Boy, E3 was where you wanted to be.
Yeah.
Of course, this was before internet streaming, so now you can enjoy E3 just as well.
Totally.
At home.
You know, Jeff Green did a post, a friend of the site, Jeff Green, just wrote on Twitter, when he covered E3, you know, back in the 1800s, you went to E3... And then what you wrote about E3 came out in a magazine 2 months later.
Yep.
Oh, so this is the old man's guide to E3?
Mm-hmm.
Is that what we're about to
do?
Yeah.
And now you get the news when the developers announce it at their press conference by watching a live stream. So do you really need to be there?
In fact, I would argue that the press conferences are made for TV and the audiences are just set dressing.
Yeah, and really the people who are there to cover E3, who they get behind the doors access.
So that's true.
A lot of times it's ahead, you know, embargoed coverage where they know a game is going to be announced and maybe they've played some of it. And when the press conference hits, then their story goes out and they have their impressions.
I have to say, I didn't go down to E3 with you guys, but I did watch a lot of gamers streaming on Twitch live as they're watching the conference. So they'll
react.
Have the reaction live, and I thought that was much better. The live in good commentary on what they're seeing, especially for certain types of gamers that play those types of games. I thought that was a better way to enjoy E3.
Don't you want the isolated announcements and then the commentary?
No, because the announcements are just sales pitches, right?
Yeah.
I'd rather have somebody...
the whole event, let's be clear, the whole thing is one big sales pitch.
Yeah. I actually liked having, you know, actual gamers being like, well, that's the same BS that Bethesda's been putting out for, you know, 10 years, and be somewhat critical of it, where people in the room are, I think, a little bit more hesitant to be critical right there on the spot.
Like by saying boo or something?
Mm-hmm. They get caught up in the energy, the reality distortion field. Like just like being at an Apple event.
I don't know. I don't know if they have that. I don't know if they actually achieve a reality distortion
field. I think they, some people, yeah. You know, they pander to the friends of the developers.
Did you see the FIFA announcement?
No. There was... Well, let's
I saw the FIFA announcement.
Let's start off with the press conferences. EA, that first one, and talk about some of the big announcements. Of course, there is the new BioWare game, Anthem, which looks like a Destiny-style game, mm-hmm. open world, yep. Limited multiplayer. That seems to be a big theme right now, right? Server cloud storage and cloud processing is getting cheaper, and they can run these servers, and as opposed to doing giant MMOs with subscription fees or buying hats, you buy the game and you get to play with friends, or you get to have a scripted single player portion of it. This one has mechs in it, lots of aerial combat. The worlds look massive, very detailed, and people did get to play some, and it looks good.
They made a big note of it, and this is a theme across EA's: no loot boxes, no power ups, no buying for power. And I don't believe them at all.
Right.
That they're going to actually follow through on that after the Battlefront 2 debacle. That's the only way you can call it. I thought that game looked okay. I thought the real miss is the World Cup started today.
Mm.
And I was like,
Russia's doing well.
Oh, here we go. Here, well, they're the host country. They were only up 1-0 when I was when I left this morning.
I played 3-0.
But this is your chance to generate so much FIFA hype, and that was the lowest energy FIFA announcement I've seen in years.
Do you think that's because E3 is a U.S.-centric event?
No, it's not a U.S.-centric event. I don't agree. Well, I mean, I know it's in L.A., but I mean, they had an opportunity to really push FIFA with the biggest sports spectacle ever, and they just didn't do it. The World Cup is the most watched sporting event in the world.
Yeah, but not due to the U.S. population.
No, I understand, but FIFA's popularity is global.
Absolutely.
They should have a separate streamer, separate feed just for the World Cup.
There's no, like, FIFA, like, play competition. There was no, like, none of that hype was there.
Well, so can we talk about the games we're actually excited about?
Okay, yeah.
Let's go. Okay, so at EA, Anthem, which I'm excited about. There's also
if you're going to be excited about Anthem, you got to be excited about Spider-Man and like every other damn game that was shown there, because they're all just evolutions of what came before, and they look better.
Yeah,
and I'm sure they play well.
Mm-hmm, mm-hmm.
But what are they bringing that's so new to the table?
New designs. New characters, story.
Yeah.
Okay, all right. So I'm excited about Star Wars. And while they didn't show anything, they did say there's a new Star Wars game in development by Respawn Entertainment. And that's the people who did Titanfall. And it's going to be set between episode 3 and 4. And it's going to be about the, Order 66, that Killing of the Jedis.
Yeah, and like somebody survives.
You're a Padawan.
That survives somehow.
Yeah.
See, I don't, you know, I'm not hooked by story when it comes to games. It's got to be the mechanics.
Wow.
It's all about the gameplay.
Okay.
So for me, the only game that I'm excited about after all of E3 is probably Ori 2.
Ori 2.
What?
Looked amazing.
I didn't even see this trailer.
Did you play the first one?
It's a little bit side-scroller, platformer.
It is very much, that way. But
magic
it,
and...
But very fluid.
The gameplay loop of this game is so well tuned, and the abilities that you have over the course of the game evolve so naturally and keep the game so interesting. That's one of the few games I've ever just like sat back and watched the end credits, you know, because I was just in awe.
I love that game. I'm trying to finish it now. The only knock against that game was that it's hard.
It is hard.
So what did the trailer for the new game show?
It just seemed like they were glad that the world bought into the first one, and they just went all in and spent more money on creating the most gorgeous visuals and great-looking gameplay. Like, their video isn't a amazing cinematic like Cyberpunk 2077 is.
Yep, yep, yep.
Which is an amazing cinematic, but show me the gameplay.
Yeah.
The Ori 2 video is just stunning gameplay, and you just can't wait to play it. It's like seeing a new Mario game.
It does look like, what would a game look like if it was a great platformer combined with the best animators?
Yeah.
That's what Ori is.
Well, you're very also talking about different genres of games, right? Like, if you're talking about first-person shooter, third-person shooter versus a platformer, yeah, a platformer is going to need really, really good mechanics to sell it on me. Because platformers, typically, the world-building and the writing, I'm not there for that. I'm there for playing mechanics.
Well, this is where they one-upped everybody, because their first game is known for having made people cry. That's one of the...
Okay. Absolutely.
All right. They talk about, there's YouTube videos, there's hundreds of YouTube videos of people playing this and getting emotional.
Whereas in a first-person game or third-person game, for me, as long as I have really solid, tried-and-true, run-and-gun shooting mechanics or even more stealthy mechanics, whatever, something that's iterative, as long as they build a really good world for me, which is why I'm excited for Cyberpunk 2077, because it does look different and does look crazy.
So what hooked you about that cinematic?
I mean, so to me, that's been announced to be a first-person shooter. Right? It's a first-person RPG. And
from the maker of The Witcher series.
Yes.
And this is, they've only ever done The Witcher series.
And The Witcher is beloved in PC gaming.
Very much
because
so.
It is an expansive, huge, massive RPG world, fantasy-based, and now they're doing a futuristic game. It's sci-fi GTA. It's like, and not the gameplay of GTA necessarily,
right?
But the world that you got, you can have this metropolis you're going to walk through with just crazy characters like, robots in taxi cabs and a kid playing VR and holograms everywhere. It's like the Blade Runner universe. And those cars look so cool.
It felt like very Fifth Element to me.
Yeah.
Yes, really bizarre, but saturated colors.
NC-17 Fifth Element.
Yeah. Yeah.
Apparently there's full frontal, there's unabandoned language. It's supposed to be an adult game.
Sure. Whether they really push that on you, like sometimes they do with the GTA games and the characters you interact with, this could be one thing. Or if that's just part of the world that you can wade into or not see a lot of it, I don't really care. The fact that it's looks fully realized is what I care about. Yeah. That's why I'm excited about that.
Well, the cinematic's great. And apparently there was a gameplay trailer or a gameplay sequence that people saw, 45 minutes long or something like that.
Okay.
Long gameplay sequence.
It's not online.
It was only behind closed doors.
Oh.
People that saw it, they were impressed. They've been working on this game for 5 years.
Yeah. The first teaser was 5 years ago.
I mean, wow. That's a long time. And for them not to have a date yet, that tells me it's not this year.
Well, it tells them that they've been so fortunate to be in the position where The Witcher has sold so well and has that strong community. It's almost like Eve, right? Where it's like an old game, but the community is so into it, people are still playing it, still buying it, that they can take their time and they have the money to develop something different and new.
It has to be this calendar year.
I don't think so.
You think early next year?
They would have set a date. They would have set it.
See, but it can't go beyond E3 next year. Then what are you doing?
Spider-Man was at E3 last year, wasn't it?
And I think we see a lot of that this year. Like big games. I think the game that excited me the most was probably Last of Us Part 2.
Oh.
From 100%. Sony Naughty Dog, and that one didn't also have a release date either.
That gameplay could have passed for a cinematic.
So I want to talk about that trailer. It's like an 11-minute gameplay trailer, they called it, which was a mix of a bookended by a cinematic and then a extended gameplay sequence. If you played the first Last of Us, it was a post-apocalyptic game, very much like, very dark, like The Road. Or Logan, if you saw the movie Logan, and you play as Joel and Ellie is your NPC sidekick, keeping her alive. Two characters on screen at once, following each other, interacting with each other, surviving, killing enemies. Last of Us Part 2, you're playing as Ellie, as far as we know. That gameplay sequence, which was like 8 minutes long, like you said, could have been a cinematic. But you saw gameplay in there. You saw picking up arrows. You saw hiding.
I believe it was being played. I mean, not live, but I believe that was gameplay.
And yet, it was a
so
mix of
fluid.
Like, there are moments in there that had to be like scripted. Like you get to a point where she hides underneath the truck, and at that point, enemies then activate a script where there are dialogues happening.
Of course, that's how Uncharted worked. Like same
so, it's
thing,
it's like this balance of almost like it's like. And then we did see like a QuickTime event sequence.
That's true.
You're grabbed and you got to tap the button.
Yeah.
But the whole game, like, how much of that is going to blend between the QuickTime event stuff and the, you know, precision, stealth, direct control that you have over a character? Like, I couldn't tell. It was seamless.
You said that's a game I would be happy to watch someone play.
Right, right.
That, and people have said that of Uncharted.
Yeah. Yeah. I watched someone play through the entire Uncharted, and it was intense. You know, so the thing I wanted to think about was that sequence, if it was pre-scripted, like, could have been pre-scripted, like, you know, a video game studio, a movie studio, could have made an action sequence, a one-cut, one-take action sequence, no cuts, mm-hmm. of what we saw in Last of Us Part 2. Would that have been as exciting or intense as what we saw, which is something we knew was a theoretically a playable sequence?
Right. I don't know, because the reaction to Cyberpunk has been very, very positive. You know, but
that wasn't an action sequence. Like when I watch an action movie, and there have been many, like, you know, one take long action sequences, not CG necessarily. There's that Henry movie. What it was? It was a Sharper Copley, and it was a first person shooter. Like there are a lot of one long take action sequences, and I get bored by them. I didn't get bored by this. This felt tense. Was it tense because of the story and the scenarios they set up?
I was tense because I was imagining playing it.
That's the thing. I think it's tense because you know they could fail.
It looks like at every moment she's going to die, and she gets through it.
And a player is playing it, and a player gets through it, and that's the power of games. That's why when I watch the Tomb Raider movie, it's not exciting.
But it's not like she's like the player in Last of Us 2. It's not like the player is in the zone as they would be in a Mario game or something like that, where they know the mechanics of the game so well that they are able to respond to the puzzle and, you know, in the moment do it. It seems like it's more visceral and realistic in that she's going to die because there's people there trying to kill her and they look vicious. And she just narrowly escapes every attack.
For sure, you have to give a lot to the mood and the lighting and the visuals that create that
and the sounds
tension.
And,
I have to say the other thing I noticed about that feels different from where they were with Uncharted was that the voice acting when they were playing versus the cinematic was seamless in this compared to what we've seen in previous editions, where it's very clear when you're in the gameplay area versus when you're in the cinematic area. And if that holds to what the actual gameplay feels like, that'll make a big, big difference.
And a lot of people have been talking about just the facial animations in the bookended part of the cinematics. That dance, like the faces are so wonderfully animated. Yeah, you can tell they're CG. There's a still Uncanny Valley there. But it made me think about Uncanny Valley is at some point less about the visual, the texture, and the rendering quality of than it is about the nuances of a facial animation.
Yeah, just like when she shoots the woman from underneath the car.
Mm-hmm.
It is a really incredibly tense moment, even if you're only tapping one button.
Yeah,
that really resonated with me. What about, you know, kind of more contemporary stuff like Smash Brothers coming back? Any hype for that?
Did you watch the Nintendo stream?
I did.
Because Nintendo didn't bring anything there.
They brought one thing that I was pretty hyped about, but we'll get to it in a second.
I just mean, no, I don't mean to the show. They do a live stream on their what is it called? Nintendo Direct.
Yeah.
And it was maybe an hour long, and the first half hour was a bunch of small announcements, and then the second half hour was all Smash Brothers.
That was their big thing. No new Metroid shown.
And the big deal is they're bringing back every character that's ever been in Smash Brothers.
Except poor Waluigi.
No
Waluigi.
Where
is that guy?
Plus, I guess the bad guy from Metroid.
Oh, yeah.
The alien-looking creature.
What is that thing's name?
Yeah.
As a playable character?
Yeah.
Yep.
Yeah.
I'm not a Smash Brothers person.
No, I'm not either.
And but Switch has sold so much.
It's got a huge following.
I would have thought that Switch would have a lot more new games announced for it. The one I am excited for?
Mm.
Overcooked 2.
Really?
Is that the cooking, like, is you got to cook?
Four-player cooking game.
Yeah.
Fortnite is the one that made the most sense.
Okay, okay.
Fortnite on Switch makes the most sense. I that's not my game. I don't like that game that much.
Reggie sold it hard.
It just makes sense. I'm sorry, we talked a couple months ago about a patent they had about linking Switches together.
Yeah,
where you would draw from one to the other that would create orientation, And then we saw that
in Mario Party,
which is, you know, widely considered not good.
I didn't see this.
Oh, because you remember that patent discussion?
I remember.
What?
This is
the craziest thing.
I remember watching the trailer thinking, wait a minute, I knew that they were going to do this. How did you know?
You were prescient.
This is a, you remember our discussion of this story.
You align the switches on the plane.
So they showed in the trailer people doing this and orienting the switches in different ways. So initially they had them sort of back to back, like the long side of the switch next to each other.
Yeah.
And then you drag your finger across one to the other.
To calibrate.
To calibrate. And they would sort of light up and acknowledge the calibration. And that would be happening. And then there was one where they're sort of flipped up at an angle. So they formed like kind of a teepee. Mm-hmm. So it was a 2v2 situation across the table.
The idea is you can align two switches next to each other in any orientation
and
you could possibly
imagine. And create a large screen. As if the canvas of the screen is much bigger and you have two windows.
And so when they did that later, when they set them as like a 90-degree angle, and the game, after you calibrated it, changed.
Yeah.
To acknowledge that mapping.
It's so smart, the calibration. Just by swiping your finger from one screen to the next, it just knows how they must be lined up.
I'm surprised that it's already made its way into a game.
It's a combat-like game. It's a tank game. So you can drive your tank from one screen to the other and bounce.
You gotta buy two switches.
Yeah.
So they only showed two switches doing this.
Right.
Though theoretically, you could chain as many as you needed, as long as they're all connected with the same game.
That was the reaction I heard from most people, is like, not, oh my God, I got to do this with a friend. It was like, I have to buy a second Switch.
I have to find a friend with another Switch.
Well, and the once again, like their advertising for the Switch shows people bringing the Switch out into the world where they brought the Switch on a camp out. And the family's gathered around.
Did
the
they
table
show it like shutting off after 10 minutes because of the poor battery life?
Oh, you know what? The Switch would be great in a Tesla.
Hooked up to the generator.
Anything else really grab you from E3 in terms of just, you know, standard big budget games? Fallout 76? No?
Yeah, experience-wise, like, yeah, and we'll talk about, like, Bethesda stuff, I think, in a little bit, because there's a lot of VR things there. But, you know, it's at LA Convention Center. There are two big halls. Who's not there is more telling than who is there, right? There is no giant Microsoft booth. There's no EA booth in past years. There's no Activision booth. Blizzard's not there, right? These big pillars.
Blizzard has their own
game. Exactly, exactly. Yeah. In that sense, it's like CES, where, you know, Apple's not there, and at some years Intel wasn't even really there, and so the people that are there, yeah, there's big stuff to announce, but it feels like it's just a section of the gaming as a spectrum as a whole. Bethesda was probably the biggest non-hardware maker as a publisher, because they had Doom, Fallout, Rage, and Fallout 76 was their big announcement. And that was probably the big thing of show, from something that we didn't know was in development to something that's coming out this year, at the end of the year.
And you're a fan of the Fallout series.
I really love that aesthetic. I love the mid-century post-apocalyptic
online
world.
Only doesn't give you a little pause, though?
Again, this is back goes back to that Destiny Anthem style of development now. You buy the game, right? It's not like a fee, and they can add new content whenever they want. Now, I'm not the biggest fan of the crafting element, like building the bases. Like Metal Gear had that, and this one, they're letting you MMO style go with a bunch of friends and build your world. I don't want to do that. I just want to play with a friend and explore the wasteland, which they say now is four times as big, and it's a prequel.
I don't understand how, because they said it was, as you said, multiplayer only online. It's only dozens of players per server.
Right, so it's not MMO.
So how is it that it's a bigger world with only dozens of players?
Because the game could have been single player, and it could have been four times as big, and you'd just be wandering.
So is it possible you might not even run into a player if you jump in for an hour?
I think, it's like Sea of Thieves in that sense, where you can group up, party up, and then use the party system, and you play with your friends in however many, and then they might just randomly drop another group in another part of the world. But yeah, it's like you can't find a nemesis and say, oh, I engage this one party once, and log in 2 weeks later and say, I'm going to find them again in the world. The single player is really the most interesting part. I mean, the campaign is going to be the most interesting part of it, and playing that campaign, the story with other people. which will change how they design the combat and design the levels, right? It won't be that style,
right?
Freeze and aim at the parts of the enemies.
Because you can't do that kind of bullet time.
And they may have to do more dungeon-like situations that require it to scale up for lots of people.
You mean instances?
Instances, yeah.
Did you guys go to the Fortnite Pro-Am tournament at the soccer stadium?
We didn't go to the soccer stadium, but we stopped at the Fortnite booth, and that was not the biggest booth, but they had the biggest logo. Yeah. It was just a sign that said Fortnite, maybe like 15, 20 feet tall.
Money.
Yeah.
That was so they rented out a soccer stadium.
I saw the image, yeah.
And paired pro streamers with celebrities. So like there are football players, there are comedians, like Joel McHale was playing with somebody, and like, you know, there was Paul George from the NBA was playing with Myth. And so like there are all these players, and they had a pro-am that was $3 million to charity, and it wasn't full, but they had a soccer stadium that had a lot of people in it watching.
A
this
a lot of people watching. I wonder what
700,000 people at a peak. Just on the Fortnite stream.
Why on the stream? Yeah, but there were a lot of people at the stadium watching.
Yeah, there was a few thousand people at the stadium.
Did that's crazy. Ninja and Drake make a reappearance?
Drake was not there, but Ninja was playing with Marshmello, the DJ, and they ended up winning.
Oh, well, all right.
You know about a DJ named Marshmello?
No.
Okay,
but I do from watching his stream.
Okay.
No, I am a fellow old. I was like, who the hell is this?
Okay.
But 700,000 people watching that stream, it's, you know, is pretty impressive. I wonder where that game's going to go. Like, you can see the streamers, the video game pros, don't think much of that game, but it's so rampant.
You can't not play it.
Exactly. So, I wonder where that's going to go. Any indies? No?
So, that's the problem with only going for a day. We only got to see the big stuff.
That's true.
We didn't get to really dive deep into some of the smaller games.
I would love to see Valve, with all of their money, just make a booth and invite the indies to come and demo their games, as they do for VR developers at the VR events.
I saw a joke on Reddit that Gabe should get up there and, you know, give some press conference, and at the end a giant 3 just appears on the screen. And then it just, like, an E pops next to it and says, thanks for coming to E3.
That's funny.
And just have, like, the crowd lose their minds.
E3 confirmed.
Gosh. Anything else? New Doom.
We'll talk
New
about Doom? Well, VR games in a second.
And the lack of them. Like, that was my takeaway, is that I go to so many VR events.
Where VR is Oculus is a massive booth,
right,
and their Vive has things set up. Yeah, Bethesda, like last year, had probably the most. They're the big publisher with the most PC VR games, right? They had a Wolfenstein VR thing, Prey, mm-hmm. And Skyrim, of course, in VR, and demos for some of those.
They have this new game coming out called Blades for mobile, like a free-to-play game, and it's eventually going to be playable on PC in VR as well. So they have things in the works.
Okay. All right.
Yeah.
And then, you know, Oculus wasn't even there. You know, the Facebook Gaming was there.
Yeah.
And they had Defector, but like there was no giant Oculus booth. Alienware had Echo Combat, and we'll talk about that in the VR minute.
Yeah. PSVR was the biggest. I think they had the most new VR games.
Right. And yeah, we did play a bunch of those. Yeah. All right.
Little pop culture.
Yeah. Let's do it.
I watched this movie last night called The Incredibles, the original, with my son.
Right, what's it about?
It got me pretty hyped for this weekend. How are you guys feeling?
I have my tickets to see The Incredibles 2 Saturday afternoon. Can't wait.
The embargo is obviously listed on reviews. The reviews, I have not read any reviews, but just some high-level stuff.
Do you know the Rotten Tomatoes score?
I did not look at the score.
Oh.
All I read was one line that said, the sequel is worthy of the original.
Wow.
That's the... Wow.
Nope. Okay. Now I can't enjoy it. I bet it won't be. You can't raise expectations.
So you don't want to know the score. You don't want to raise your expectations.
No, you want to manage those.
My expectations are actually not high right now.
Really? Yeah. How can it not be for what this, for just watching the original is because, such a joyous experience.
Exactly. I love the original so much. It was so different because the original came out, if you remember, before superhero films, before The Wave, before Iron Man 1.
Right.
And so now we have 18 Marvel movies in between The Incredibles. Incredibles is so great because it was not only Pixar on their streak of hits, but it was also the first time we had like a Fantastic Four movie, essentially. All the things I love from comic books in our Pixar style with amazing animation. And
I know you talk about it as a superhero movie. That's a family movie. That's a movie about a family, first and foremost.
I'm setting my expectations, just like I did with Finding Dory. And hopefully it will surprise me just like Finding Dory.
The thing that happens to franchises like The Incredibles is like they too much time passes and people start thinking of it as a superhero movie. And then the sequel is just a superhero movie. But actually, it was a family movie who they were superheroes. So as long as they nailed that, great, great. Like Norm, I'm managing my expectations.
I'm beyond hype. I can't wait for it. I'm going to see it this weekend, too.
Came out in 2004.
That's right.
Man, 14 years ago.
Yeah.
I just can't wait to hear Dash's voice be, like, deep because the voice actor is, like, old now. Hey, guys, it's me, Dash.
That was, like, the fifth Pixar movie? It was early. And it was so different from their previous films. So many different sets compared to the first few films. Amazing stuff.
Yeah. Norm, you've expressed a lot of excitement about bridging the Fox superhero universe and the Disney Marvel superhero universe.
My theory, and this is because Disney was in, they had put a bid in for $60 billion, I believe, to buy 20th Century Fox's movie properties, which include the rights to, among other things, the X-Men and Fantastic Four and Daredevil, I believe. And I would love to, for those characters to be told through.
AT&T scored a huge victory yesterday.
Jeremy,
we can thank CNET for that one.
My
hope was that at the end of Avengers 4, right, the next movie, still yet untitled, when everything gets reset and maybe a couple superheroes die.
Oh, I can tell you the title. It's Avengers 4, Thanos Wins.
The Thanos Initiative. I would hope my secret hope was, you know, at the end of that film, how do they set up Phase 4? They have emerging from the shadows, the X-Men. It's time to reveal ourselves. May not happen. Hold your horses, Disney.
Disney might have to cough up another at least $5 billion.
So
as Comcast has put in a bid for $65 billion.
Comcast, an all-cash bid. Comcast Universal.
Wait, seriously? No stock?
No cash.
No, you don't have that much money. What?
They have that much money.
Oh, my God.
Yeah, but they don't have enough money to lay fiber.
That's right. That's insane. Wow. They wouldn't know what to do with it.
I'd like this just from the pure competition aspect. It does give me some pause that Disney owns so many franchises.
Yep.
And how much they have control. But fucking Comcast? No, thank you.
Yeah.
Yeah. Universal, they had the Hulk. they have the rights to the standalone Hulk movie.
No, I mean, you know, like Comcast will do stupid stuff like, you know, Wolverine's going to show up on the Today Show as part of their NBC integration.
Yeah, what was the 30 Rock joke when they were bought by Comcast? It was Shinehart.
Yeah, that's right, Shinehart Wigs.
Did you say how much Disney had offered?
60. I think it was 60.
Well, according to this article, it's $52 billion all stock.
Oh, okay.
From Disney.
So
I think
much
Disney
lower.
Has some money, though. They can make this work.
I don't know. I thought they
Avengers alone more. Just grossed $2 billion.
Yeah.
$2 billion?
Yeah, it passed
worldwide.
$2 billion
worldwide.
Well, that money's still good.
Sure.
That's amazing.
You gotta wait for a while for it to come back from China though.
I think it's only the fourth movie that has passed $2 billion.
I wish Disney would just worldwide. Choose to buy I don't think Disney needs to own the Alien franchises. Disney wants Deadpool, they're
not gonna
X-Men.
Split up the studio like that.
I know. That's what sucks about it. Yeah. Because I can't see Disney doing anything with those other Fox franchises.
No, but maybe they'll let them gather some dust so we can have it reemerge
on the cheap. Some other, then Universal can buy those and do something with them. uninteresting business news that's affecting the way we enjoy our pop culture news. Speaking of pop culture, superhero movies, we have our first two images from the Patty Jenkins directed Wonder Woman 84.
And a fairly big spoiler in these images.
Yeah, so I don't know if we want to talk about the spoiler. One image is a big spoiler, one image is not. First of all, the movie, which is still entitled, is called 84 because they bought the domain and apparently has been, they've revealed that it will be set in 84.
Yeah.
A good year, I might add.
Now, was the TV show on then? Or that was more the 70s.
That was the 70s. Yeah.
So the image that is not a spoiler is Wonder Woman, Diana Prince, looking at a wall of TVs.
Yeah, Matrix style.
Kind of like in a mall. And it's all kind of staticked out, but you do see things like Family Vacation. You see
Christie Brinkley riding in a car.
Yeah, you see a lot of era-appropriate images. Mm-hmm. Doesn't say anything except she is reconciling with the 80s.
We do know who is the villain of this movie.
Do we?
Should I say, or do you not want to know?
Do you know?
I think I do know, but I'm debating whether
the casting is weird.
Yeah, let's talk about this. It's Cheetah.
It's Cheetah, which is a famous Wonder Woman villain.
Yep,
has basically animalistic powers,
mm-hmm.
And cast Kristen Wiig.
Yeah, I'm not. I don't like her as a villain.
Has she ever been a villain?
That interesting.
You could say she was the villain of Bridesmaids.
Can't say I saw Bridesmaids.
What? That was a great movie.
or Knocked Up?
No,
she wasn't really the villain there. Yeah.
It's a weird casting.
It's going to be a different. Tonally, it's going to be so different. Visually, the image that was released that is a spoiler shows some other characters, just background extras in 80s clothing, and it looks vibrant and it looks 80s, and it reminds me of Glow, you know.
To me, my more cynical take is, here we go, DC, again, a couple years behind the curve.
See,
Stranger Things.
I'm thinking keep it coming. Like, if it's, I love this 80s wave. I will ride this as long as you feed it to me.
All right, George R. R. Martin, who still writing Game of Thrones, he let it out that the Game of Thrones prequel series, multiple series, are currently in development.
Multiple?
Is it multiple? Or is it just no, just one. Sorry. The one in development.
What do you want?
Even mean, though?
Yeah, what would it be? Would it be about, like the Targaryens early on? Or are we talking about the rise to power of the whatever that Snow King guy is? What's his name? That guy.
There are 5 Game of Thrones sequels in the works.
What?
Yeah.
What do you mean? You mean
there are 5 projects after Game of Thrones that HBO is doing. They're going to milk this. The Game of Thrones shared fantasy universe is going to be unending. But will people care if it's not the characters we know? Do I want to know about all the Targaryens?
But this is the argument behind, should Star Wars be about the characters you know or not? All the new movies.
It's true. Is the world compelling enough, or is it just the characters?
Yeah.
I think Star Wars, you can make a case that the world is super compelling because they set up the Force.
Mm-hmm.
But with Game of Thrones, what is it? Dragons and
yeah.
I guess what I do love about Game of Thrones is, as big as that world is, it's still just a small part. It's like England and Spain, right? Right, there's still a whole Westeros is very small, so there's a lot of world to cover, but let the show finish and stick the landing. We have one more season, and then we'll see whether we're hungry for more.
I'm not super interested in 5 sequels, prequels. I think the biggest news that we kind of glossed over is, and we skipped it in the Pixar segment, John Lasseter is leaving.
Yeah.
He's exiting Pixar at the end of the year.
Well, he's been on a leave for quite a while now, several months, for the same reason. But now he's officially out. Or he'll be consulting through the end of the year.
Now, we don't know exactly what the bad behavior was. There's allusions to it, which is just incredibly unfortunate. And I believe there needs to be consequences like this. I wonder what that means for Pixar, because everyone has associated him as the guiding voice for, you know, more than a decade now.
I think just like Apple has, you know, Apple University, Pixar has cultivated a culture within established directors and new directors to tell good stories. And I think they've proven, you know, with even with their known franchises, you know, with Toy Story 3, Lee Unkrich was not a known director and he did a fantastic job with it. And then he did it again with Coco. So like, I don't think you need the old guard necessarily.
But Lee Unkrich was part of the old guard. He was co-director of several Pixar films before he did Toy Story 3.
But and maybe that's not the perfect example, but there is a new guard, and there are people who've been there a long time. It's not just the sole hand of Lasseter.
Yes.
And even the work that he did with Disney Animation Studios, that the new guard of directors there have made fantastic films.
I think the same was said about when Steve Jobs departed, though, that he wasn't the sole hand, but somebody holding a singular vision for what the studio represents. I think there's something to that. We'll see if it means anything. It'll be years before we actually see it.
I don't think it's even a singular vision. It's a singular it's a process, right? Mm-hmm. If you read Catmull's book, it's about the brain trust and about being honest and not being mm-hmm. afraid to completely switch directions if they're not feeling it.
Yeah. And I think that brain trust idea and what Norm's alluding to is a group of people at Pixar from all ranks within the company, all who have a terrific sense of story. They will get together and critique directors on their ideas for in-development movies.
Yeah.
And that idea is what they brought to Disney when there was the merger.
Mm-hmm. And since then, you know, you have films like Moana and Wreck-It Ralph and Big Hero 6. And I would say that what you would hope is that the culture of both these studios, Pixar and Disney Animation, can, even though they're under the giant umbrella of Disney, they can be independent enough to resist a lot of the forces that business pushes on them, mm-hmm. which you couldn't even say was entirely the case with Lasseter, because he did Cars 2 and Cars 3, which, you know, whether you like them or not, they're definitely...
I don't think he directed Cars 3.
Or he did Cars 2, yeah. but those films, you know, while he was there, they were definitely had merchandise and the business mindset pushing those films.
Yeah.
And well, you don't feel that way with Dory 2 or Finding Dory and Incredibles 2, and hopefully you don't feel that way with Wreck-It Ralph 2 and the sequels. You know, only make it if they feel like there's a good story to tell.
Yeah, I agree. I don't think this is going to affect the quality of Pixar in the slightest. I mean, I think that there's a lot of people there who have undying respect for him as a creative person, but whatever happened internally is something that they're going to have to wrestle with their feelings about him personally.
Do you think that any director steps up to take the reins of a guiding voice?
You know, I don't know. Part of me feels like it's okay for him to leave regardless, because he has done so much for computer animation and launched the world's greatest animation company that we've seen in our lifetime. And he's done so much good. That's fine. Let him go. Let the company take over. Maybe he's given the reviews that Cars 2 got. Maybe he's, you know, maybe not fit to direct more films. If whether or not there are people who are willing to take his place at the top, who knows? But, you know, I think it's fine. I think that Pixar is going to be just fine.
Hey, Pixar Pier opens soon, next weekend.
Yep.
In Disneyland. And Pixar Fest is going on. Yeah. I want to make the drive down. Speaking of singular creative visions that may clash with what? Maybe good for the story. Did you read about George Lucas and what's been revealed about the first hints at what he had originally planned for a third trilogy?
A third trilogy?
Well, what we have is the current trilogy, The Force Awakens, Last Jedi.
Yeah. The Wills.
Yeah, so I guess in this book, an interview was done with George Lucas in which he gave one brief sentence about if he had not sold to Disney and made another trilogy, he would have explored the microbiotic universe of Star Wars and these creatures known as the Whills, which are the beings that run the Force.
They feed on the Force. Yeah.
The midichlorians.
It's a midichlorians based trilogy.
Yes. He needed to explain those anyway.
He wanted to explain. He wanted to go deeper into the midichlorians.
I would push back against needed to explain those.
He personally needed to explain them. But he also acknowledges in this quote that the fans would not have loved it.
Yeah. Okay. Good.
And they resisted the Force Awakens or the Phantom Menace, and he would have done it anyway.
I do like how if there is a universal force out there, he's trying to ramp up a tree of life that explains the fundamental ways that this force works. So I appreciate sort of the mathematical symmetry that he's trying to generate in the universe. But wow.
Yeah.
Thank you for avoiding whatever this is.
You know what? I'd love to see him direct another movie.
Yeah.
Not a big budget. Not a $200 million budget film.
Yeah.
Give him $25 million and let him make some indie film.
Star Wars, the success of Star Wars robbed us of an independent director.
Yeah. Yes, exactly.
Right?
I'd love to see him go back to his roots, like play around with the Western and see what he can come up with that.
Great, or whatever. Just go do something different.
Yeah. I have a weird story, an update on our friend, Billy Mitchell, Hot Sauce King.
Friend is a strong term there.
And video game fraud.
My friend Preston Burt runs a video game convention called the Southern Fried Game Expo. It's a pinball and retro gaming convention in Atlanta.
Hot sauce present?
Billy Mitchell was there.
Selling hot sauce.
Was he selling hot sauce?
I don't know.
He sells hot sauce at the game shows he goes to.
Oh, well, I don't know about that. But he did do a panel of sorts. Panel is a stretch for what happened. But he essentially was on a panel to respond to the MAME controversy about his scores. And the moderator asked a question, basically introduced Billy Mitchell, and then he went on an hour tirade.
What?
Billy Mitchell
without
did.
Stopping. Yeah. So, like, a Variety reporter was there and said the moderator didn't get to ask a question until 50 minutes into
How
the
panel. How could you go for an hour?
And so
it's like a filibuster.
And people just said that he sounded like a maniac, but he was promising to go to every gaming convention he can to clear his name.
Oh, so this is Billy Mitchell, who famously beat a contender for the top Donkey Kong score in the world. And 10 years later, video evidence was shown that he actually had cheated and either had used emulation or a hacked board in order to do so.
Yeah, there was some MAME involved.
All his scores have been wiped from the record. And now you're saying that
he claimed that
what
the
is his
MAME footage was faked.
Oh, that he's actually innocent.
Yes.
But he doesn't have the
tapes. And then somebody had challenged him, like, why don't you play Donkey Kong? And he claimed there is no Donkey Kong games at this convention. There were three, according to reports. And one person actually responded on a thread being like, you know, I had a MAME console too, if he really wanted to prove that.
Nice.
So but
I think we can look for Billy Mitchell to just continue some insanity at these conventions.
He's making Donkey Kong great again.
Innocence. And it sounds like he is way off the rails.
Oh, that's so sad.
I think it was sad a long time ago. It's just more sad now.
What do you mean? It was sad when he was legit?
Well, it was the personality. the portrayal.
Yeah, he's the evil villain.
Yeah, and it's. I mean, we should recommend Man vs. Snake also, right? Like, if you want to follow
great documentary,
the culture of classic video game competition, and King of Kong is a great one. Also, Man vs. Snake, also a fantastic one. Wow. Does someone have a recording of that footage?
Yes.
Of the whole tirade.
Yeah, I haven't. I don't think it's been released yet.
I would love to catch a glimpse of it.
Well, I think you're just going to be able to see these tirades in more places in the coming months.
It's a redemption tour.
We have two movies to talk about.
Sure.
The Mr. Rogers documentary is out this weekend.
Well, I had no idea.
I didn't even know about this. I knew about the Tom Hanks movie in development.
I watched the trailer and started crying at this movie. It is absolutely pulls.
It's showing right now.
It's at Alamo.
I can't wait to see this movie. You guys are going to see Mr. Rogers mean something to you guys?
I grew up on him. Absolutely. I mean, at the time, I didn't know how much I'd appreciate him later, obviously.
Yeah. And it just seems perfect for a time when we're very polarized to see a story about Mr. Rogers, who's all about bringing people together. And the trailer for First Man released.
Yes. Damon Chazelle's starring Ryan Gosling, biopic about Neil Armstrong. And we talked a little about this on Still Entitled, but my fear is that it will be too overly dramatic, dramatized, his personal demons and family conflict.
Do they go to the moon in the movie?
Yes. Yeah. In the trailer.
Is that how it ends?
I hope not. Okay. I hope it's about the aftermath of what it means to be the first man.
Because it's not about the mission. It's about him on planet Earth dealing with...
I think at least in the trailer, that's part of it.
The training.
I hope. Yeah, it's not Apollo 13, right? It's not going to be about, you know, in 2 hours, the real time. I would love that movie, right? I would love what from launch to stepping on the moon and all the difficulties and then go with flashbacks. That would be a really interesting way to cut it. But I think we see a lot of Earth and a lot of like the space race at the time, the urgency, but the money being spent.
The drama of his relationship with his family.
Family, exactly. And that's the stuff that I don't know how much I want, because it might be a good for good story, but as we approach 50th anniversary of Apollo 11, like I just want to see a good representation of it.
I think it will be.
As true as that is, like, I think it's important that we humanize these famous astronauts as well and find out more about things we didn't know about them.
And humanize
and
not...
hopefully not over-dramatize. If you're going to humanize them, do it authentically.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. And humanize, not lionize, because they have faults. I will say, you know, I've seen Neil Armstrong speak a number of times over the years before he passed, and... the cadence of Ryan Gosling's speech in the trailer is eerily accurate of Neil Armstrong. And so I hope they capture every astronaut I've ever talked to that spent any time with Neil Armstrong spoke to how humble and how generous he was later in life. I'm sure he has foibles like every other person, but I hope that spirit comes through in some way.
All right. And one last bit of pop culture news. I know it's a little early for Halloween, but we are avid cardboard builders here at Tested. And in Japan, there's a company called Showa Note that makes cardboard costumes. They just got the license for Star Wars, and they're doing a cardboard Darth Vader costume. That looks pretty awesome.
How much does it cost?
Their previous ones have been like $25
what?
For the costume. Yeah, they did a full samurai. Wow. So if you add the Disney licensing tax, let's say $30.
Yeah.
Is it come in black or do you have to paint it?
It's black. Yeah. It looks pretty cool.
Is it just the helmet?
I think...
it's pretty detailed.
This one might just be the helmet. Their past ones have had the body armor.
Yeah.
And I would like... even if this one was like just the helmet and the chest plate, I think that's enough.
Yep.
You don't think you need the full gloves. But very cool. Speaking of Comcast and cable conglomerates and the right for free speech on the internet, hey, net neutrality, what's going on?
Well, the period where net neutrality was active has expired, so there is no new net neutrality rules and regulations in effect unless you live in Washington State, where they've passed state level net neutrality regulations. Mm-hmm. Which I believe are being challenged in court, like who has the authority to actually proclaim that.
Part of the new, is it a new law now? The new federal law is that states can't do that.
Yeah, so that's why there's a challenge in court of whether the states have the authority to actually enact.
That's the most insidious part of this law, that states are stripped of that ability to block it.
I mean, that also came out this week. EgyptPie claimed that there was a DDoS attack on FCC servers at that time.
Oh, yeah.
And it's come out that that is a total fabrication.
Mm-hmm.
There was no such thing that happened. There's no evidence for that.
California has a similar law proposed as well.
Proposed. It has not.
No.
How does that get regulated if it's a company conglomerate running, you know, internet providers in multiple states, and yet in Washington, maybe California, that would be regulated?
I think the hope is we are so influential that they will bow to California, and California will influence their ability to affect other states, just like with other forms of safety.
While I'm totally in favor of net neutrality, and I think most of the listeners to the show agree as well, this state versus federal thing is just going to cause problems. Like, this does feel like the domain of federal oversight. And I hate to say that given what is happening there, but...
Mm. Well...
It's not over because there's a lot of legal challenges in place to this ruling going in effect. So it's not like the fight for net neutrality is over.
When it's the wrong judgment, then states do need to stand up for it and take it to court just to bring it into the spotlight.
I don't know. I mean, I think what you're talking about is like, what does wrong mean in this case?
Mm-hmm.
Like, wrong from your perspective is like you don't agree with it and like the majority of Americans don't agree with it. But... I think that's a very hard argument to make.
I mean, it's the internet equivalent of gerrymandering.
I mean, we've seen the negative consequences of healthcare not being able to go across state lines. It's arbitrary to have state lines regulate something that is not necessarily defined on a state level.
With the rulings not in effect anymore, the only thing we can do is be vigilant and trust the watchdog groups to point out when the telecoms are infringing, even though they may be doing it legally, but diminishing our quality of internet.
And what a time for this ruling to go in effect, because the merger between AT&T, the acquisition, essentially, of AT&T and Time Warner was approved, or at least the legal challenges to it were faded away.
So what will it take to reinstate net neutrality at this point?
New FCC chairman would help.
Okay, yeah. I mean, do we need a new administration then? Could this happen if the Democrats were to take the House and the Senate?
No. Well, yes, it could. But it's really about the legal challenges in the court, about whether the FCC has the right to institute these rulings, whether they have, especially around regulation of states and the way it's done. It can easily be overturned in Congress. And in fact, didn't the House pass something in favor as well, and it stalled out in the Senate? So there are places that this can be overturned, and there is a lot of bipartisan support for it. I wonder if we're going to see any of the negative consequences in the short term,
right,
that people have suggested. I don't know.
Ugh, that's a bummer. Really unfortunate. How about some GPUs? Intel, which has done, has forayed into integrated graphics and better integrated graphics and better integrated graphics, may be going back into, and I'm going to say back because remember Intel did have their own GPUs, discrete GPUs at some point.
Nope, don't remember that.
They had their, I'll look it up, but they did, I believe.
But they were also integrated?
No, those were, I think they had discrete ones. That
like
were just discrete
PCI?
GPUs. Yeah.
Wow.
Yeah. They may be going back into making discrete GPUs to compete with NVIDIA. How do you guys feel about that?
Great. Competition's good. How can you compete with NVIDIA?
I didn't see this coming, that Intel was going to get into the GPU market. I realize this is a bottleneck right now, and there's a big opportunity, and maybe they're hitting limitations with how much they can accelerate their chips because of just physics at that nanometer scale. I guess you can only add so many cores, which is what seems to be their process right now.
Well, discrete GPUs can mean a couple of things, because they're used not only for consumer side, for gaming, PC gaming, but also in data centers and for all sorts of business applications. So we don't know if they mean that they're going to intend to have in 2020 their first discrete GPU for consumers, or go business to business first and then go to consumers. I think they want to go both. But there is a lot of money there, and both NVIDIA and AMD have shown that, and not only direct to consumers but also integration in hardware, putting GPUs in things like game consoles or even cars.
Mm-hmm.
I think competition's good. I don't know what they hope to bring to it aside from their manufacturing expertise. They did hire, I think previously, AMD's head of their graphics department
last year.
So hopefully they're going to put their money where their mouth is.
Evidently,
and put a good product out.
They either think they can compete at the high end, or they see a niche that no one else is addressing. That's my business analysis.
Speaking of other companies moving into areas that they previously were not, Google has their Chromebooks and they have their Pixel Book, their Their self-branded Chromebook runs Chrome OS, of course, and Chrome OS's Android apps. But it may be the case that their new Chromebook, their new Pixelbook, may be updated to run Windows 10.
What? Isn't this a huge departure from what we know them, what the strategy has been?
Yeah. The indication of this is that they are making firmware changes currently to pass some Microsoft compatibility tests to get approval to run it. But it doesn't exactly mean that even though the hardware might be certified as being suitable for Windows 10, that they will officially support it. But I think it would be really interesting.
Okay.
Yeah.
All right. Chromebooks are cheap.
Some Chromebooks are cheap.
The Pixelbook is not cheap.
Yeah.
Oh.
Yeah.
This is just the Pixelbook?
Yeah.
Okay.
Yeah. Windows, their business, decreasingly Windows PCs, decreasingly Windows, increasingly Azure and other businesses. But they are still, they do have a hardware and services division, and we are hoping to see new Microsoft hardware, if not end of this year, then next year. Early next year, the reports are that a new Surface Pro will come out mid-next year. There are some code names for it already, and that it will feature a pretty heavy redesign. The Surface, I think, has done really well for them. Originally, it was like the Pixelbook. It was a flagship device to pave the way for OEMs to do similar types of hardware. But I think it's done so well that I would recommend the Surface Pro over alternatives if you can afford it.
Isn't the that's what I was wondering about. The Surface Pro is pretty expensive compared to the original Surface.
It is, especially when you have to buy the keyboard covers and the pen and all the other accessories. But at certain times of the year when they go heavily discounted, it's really good price. You get sub $1,000 a really good Surface Pro. Especially the new one.
Have you ever seen one in the wild? I mean,
really?
I've seen both Surface Pros and Surface Books.
Where?
Not as many as the MacBooks. Like, let's not front that this is out competing MacBook
Coffee
Pro.
Shops and airports.
But, yeah,
you do.
I see Surface Pros and Surface Books. Absolutely.
Oh. All right.
Yeah.
Good.
I think touchscreens on laptops are powerful.
I think it's the second most common laptop I see out in the wild.
I mean, their big target market when they, you know, had the Surface 3 and 4. And now it's the Surface Pro with school. So I haven't been on campus in a while, and I'd be really interested to know on a campus, if you're a student out there or you work with students, how many of those use Surface Pros? And if you see a good amount, I mean, maybe not as many as MacBooks, then that's a good sign for Microsoft because they really want students to use their laptops. And then also in the same report, we may expect a new HoloLens next year as well. They did can the second HoloLens and kind of put it still on hold. But the next HoloLens supposedly will have wider field of view, lighter, maybe more consumer focused in terms of cost. And next year, I think, would be a good time for them to put that out if they want to have some early mover advantage or keep what they did.
There's also projections for when the next Xbox would come out. Codename Scarlet.
Scorpio to Scarlet.
2020 is the projections for it. This
sounds
would be
right.
A full iteration. It wouldn't be like the half that we saw with Scorpio.
Yep.
There wasn't really many rumors about what would be inside this. 2020 seemed right for console makeovers for both Sony and Microsoft. Seems about right.
Okay.
That would be about... Is that 5 years since the Xbox One and PS4 came out?
And then from that to Scorpio to One X and then a full next generation. The big question will always be, is it going to be a standard traditional console at a reasonable price that you plug into your TV and play with gamepads, or will they do something different, you know, whether it's with Kinect, whether it's for motion sensing, whether it's for different interface, different game, or even different type of display with a VR headset?
Xbox One came out 5 years ago now.
Oh, wow. So they'll be seven by the time. Mm-hmm. Do you ever see them selling a TV that has this, like a gaming unit integrated
into it?
Well,
this seems to be a big trend. A lot of console makers have talked about how maybe not the next generation, but maybe one more generation down the line, they won't be selling a $500, $400, $600 box, that it will be cloud processed and all their games will be streamed.
Mm-hmm.
And Sony's invested in that platform, and there have been experiments in it, of course, with OnLive. And but infrastructure may be better now to do that, and the computing, the cloud computing is cheaper, and Microsoft is building up its own business, right, in cloud computing, so they have the data centers to run it, and maybe not next year, but in 5 years, broadband may be fast enough that streaming games is good enough.
I just can't imagine that. I can't imagine that having any latency at all, because people take this stuff seriously.
I think for competition, yes.
So, I mean, that's a big part of it. You're not going to see people playing Fortnite over a streaming network and doing it in any way, shape, or form like they do now.
So maybe you're talking about game trends may affect the viability of this type of service, right? If in 5 years it really is about Fortnite and multiplayer and big, massive multiplayer, quick reaction games, then yes. Or does game design change and accommodate this type of play? Because you don't need low latency for Minecraft. If something like Minecraft took over the world,
yep.
And streaming Minecraft is totally fine.
Even World of Warcraft, stuff like that. I understand that there are games that don't require low latency, but as long as there are, you're not going to see consoles that are strictly streaming.
Strictly streaming. Maybe it's half and half. Yeah. But I would also say the value of zero to start, right? Being able to turn on your TV and boot up a game immediately and not have to turn on the console, wait for an update, a patch, wait for this disc to spin up.
Don't you feel like we're already there? Like, they go into sleep mode and they auto-update.
It still takes too long every time I want. Because they're basically PCs now.
Yeah.
Only a few more tech stories I want to jump into. Do you want to talk about this? I'm debating whether we should talk about it.
Well, you got to say what it is now.
Yeah.
What?
Wired had a story about Palmer Luckey's new company.
Oh, my goodness. Let's not this talk about
been,
this.
This has been out in the wild. It's called Andoril, which is from Lord of the Rings, and it's about building a virtual border wall that has advanced sensing technology that can actually determine when things cross an invisible barrier and actually use AI to detect what it is, whether it's an animal, a plant, or a person.
It's a tech solution to the wall.
Yeah. And I actually think, I mean, we can talk about the politics of Palmer all we want, but I think that's kind of not the interesting part, is the actual hardware here, because he's trying to miniaturize some of that work that's been done in other fields and then put it into a somewhat low-power situation that has to be resistant to lots of different weather conditions. And so while the technology of this sort of optical sensing and AI, we're seeing that in cars, trying to put that out across a very inhospitable environment in the southern border of the U.S. I think that's actually an interesting technology challenge that he's trying to take
on. Mapping the world, and it's not just about the cameras, not just about the recognition, but image recognition, the software part of it, but the physical hardware is also consideration. And you know, like you said, self-driving cars will have to deal with this as well and work in all sorts of conditions and visibilities. It is like when we saw Minority Report back in 2002 and we saw like their version of the future where people are tracked and eye tracked, and it didn't read as dystopia, it was dystopia. And that is becoming more real and real right now. There's a story about gigapixel cameras being used in China and gigapixel arrays, like, you know, dozens of lenses and sensors stitching together these massive images that to the human eye, you wouldn't be able to decipher what was going on or take it all at once. But for a computer, they would use that for tracking people. Mm-hmm. And at that scale, our brain just can't comprehend the potential of surveillance that these machines have.
I have less of an issue about this virtual wall, like from a politics standpoint. I just wonder, like, why is Palmer doing this? Like, he doesn't strike me as the person with the tech know-how for this particular project. But we'll see where it goes. He's landed some interesting partnerships too. Beyond that, with virtual vehicles and stuff. So we'll see where all this goes.
Yeah, I think. I mean, I would have met. Is that me again? What is going on?
Never go to CNET.
Freaking the same site. I imagine his politics are driving this more than anything, along with his newfound wealth. and his partnerships that has led to. Mm-hmm. Yeah, that's all there is to it.
Before we jump into a shower, let's also talk about an AI-generated movie, something that other computers can also do. This is, remember last year, there was a film competition, and researchers put on a neural network the seed elements for a script, and then the computer generated a screenplay, and then they filmed with Thomas Middleditch a short film using the screenplay. It made no sense, but it was fascinating because this whole, you know, the dynamics of human interaction and dialogue and plot were generated by machine. This year, they've done the same thing, and except not only did the computer generate the screenplay, mm-hmm. it also generated the visuals using deepfakes, essentially.
Oh my gosh!
So there's like a green screen kind of effect.
It was fed in two movies, two source films. I don't know if they were public domain films, but they were fed in two science fiction films with dialogue and imagery, of course, and then green screen actors, and then face swap the actors in based on its script, and then generated the whole movie by itself.
Can you watch this movie right
now? You
can.
Yeah, it's embedded in a YouTube video at an Ars Technica. It's called Zone Out. It's not good. It doesn't work at all. The face swapping, because they only had a limited time.
I mean, does the deep fake work though visually?
No. I'm saying it doesn't even like it looks terrifying. Like faces are warped in many places, and the angles don't work because they only had 48 hours to do the processing. But I mean, it's cohesive to some extent. It's a weird surrealist film. But it was completely generated by an AI.
Well, what aspect was generated? Obviously, it did the compositing and the face mapping and all that. But
it did it based on its own, the script that it made
but did
itself.
But did it have footage that it re-edited?
Or? Yeah, so it was fed two public domain films, The Last Man on Earth and The Brain That Wouldn't Die.
Did it cut them up?
And it cut them up. Scenes up, and it created characters, and it used those characters with dialogue that it wrote.
Now I'm wondering if I'm even here or if this is like an AI composite podcast. Like, this is really putting me in an existential crisis now.
Huh.
Holy cow. Because I was thinking this was just the script. Like, there was a joke on Twitter this week, like, an AI made a Olive Garden commercial script.
Right.
Based on watching previous Olive Garden commercials. And it actually scarily made sense because Olive Garden commercials are all the same.
Formulaic, yeah.
So what kind of narrative did the computer come up with?
Well, it was given prompts. So the prompt was, they needed, what was it? A genetically tailored virus targets only pregnant women was the plot prompt.
Whoa. Really?
And so while this doesn't work, like you can see all the flaws in this, it's not as bad as you would think.
And a lot of it's on the crutch is that it's using existing footage from a film, right? So it's not filmmaking in that it's doing the lighting and it's doing the shot setup or the production design. It may recognize elements of these things and elements of like things like characters that it's attached from its own dialogue for the performances, but a lot of it is on the film, the source material that it pulled from. So I'd be interested if this system had a wider range of films to pull from, not just two of them. If it took into the entire library of cinema, built a database, use its, you know, its mm-hmm. deep learning, and then use actors and start remixing actors and making new films and scripts. It may not be perfect, but it would be something completely different.
Yeah, I was initially thinking, what if the computer just used a game engine and its imagination, quote unquote, to render out all the scenes?
It would need to know what things were. I would need to have like, it would need to have associations for like sets and locations and objects.
But then I was thinking, like, maybe what if you had an AI director like on a set who was actually instructing the DP and instructing the actors?
So that's a visual director, not a performance director.
Well, you know, but you're like, talking about maybe like adjusting the performance. Let's do it again, you know, faster and more.
I detected in your voice insincerity.
Yeah. That's interesting. Wonder how people.
That's a Black Mirror episode.
I suppose it is.
Right? You have all the visual cues and all the sound cues and information being in real time processed. It's like, huh, between these three takes that we did, take two will elicit the most best reaction from the audience.
Yeah.
Let's combine what you did in take two here with what you did in take one there.
I mean, presumably it would be a horrible director. Like, it wouldn't get along with the actors. Oh, it would have no sense
sure,
of their emotions.
Sure. No
and,
tact.
And all of his decisions would be the wrong ones. Like, the actors would know better. But right. you would just have to trust the AI. And
would you?
Yeah, for science. That's why.
But it's a feedback mechanism. Nothing new comes from that. Mm-hmm. You trust the AI because it works based on formula. Well, I guess you could say the same of Hollywood right now. All right, let's jump into the shower.
Oh, my gosh. All right, here we go. Let me unmute.
And so we enter Elon's shower.
Hey, it's 9% less crowded in here this week.
Tesla did announce a 9% cut to its workforce, which could be up to 3,000 people. That's a lot of people. Elon said that wouldn't affect Model 3 ramp up and deliverability. He had made a promise, I think it was last year, that they would reach profitability Q3 of this year. Mm-hmm. And I think Q1 especially was a big burn in cash situation as they ramped up Model 3. So part of this is lowering costs to get there. It sucks. It sucks for those people. But it's also part of what a startup goes through when they're trying to get across the line of profitability.
Are they really a startup?
Yeah, I think they are. They're a hardware startup.
With three mass market products?
Yeah, I mean...
Shipped?
In terms of how long the company has been around, I would still call it a startup.
Yeah, I mean, you just got to trust them when it says it's not going to affect the production. And hopefully this bounces back where when they do reach that point where they will fulfill those orders for the Model 3s, then they can grow at a rate that suits their business and not be negative cash flow deeper and deeper every year.
You pointed out that the stock market responded positively to the news.
Yeah. Trust in the company and trust in him, his word, essentially.
Well, yeah. I mean, it is in the service of profitability.
Yeah. Tesla, of course, has been doing lots of updates to its autopilot system. Last week talked about the Model 3 and the experience I've had so far. I got an update last Friday.
Your first update?
First update.
How do you know? It tells you?
So it does tell you. The overnight update I thought it did wasn't really an update. I just missed a UI element. But it did do an update, and I set a time, and you can say not update now because you have the car off, the screen turns off. Happened very quickly, didn't do a big battery drain. And this new update may be in response to some of the accidents that people have had with the autopilot system. And it now warns drivers to hold the wheel more frequently. It does that way more frequently now. And it's that weird balance between do you want to make a system be less convenient for the user by nagging them and yet be safer to a point where people don't use it? Or do you want to make it really convenient, but then you have the risk of people misusing it?
Autopilot does not mean take your hands off the wheel, period.
The naming, I think, is a problem for sure. It's assisted steering. That's really what it should be considered.
It's not nearly as sexy, is it?
No. It's your driving, and they assist you in turning better.
Yes. So the drivers using autopilot should always have their hands on the wheel.
They should be driving.
If it is alerting you more frequently,
mm-hmm.
fine. Fine. Yeah. You shouldn't have your hands off the wheel to begin with.
Well, the other problem is that in the Model 3, having your hands on the wheel as a passive hand is not enough because of the way they detect how your hands are on the wheel.
You're saying unlike the S and the X?
Where it's just a sensor where it knows your hands are touching it. Here, you actually need to give a little bit of resistance. And so if they're making you give the wheel a little bit of tugging, minor, every 20 seconds, that's an inconvenience. Then that makes the feature less desirable, even if you're using it properly.
That's surprising. I wouldn't think it would cost that much to have capacitive sensors in the steering wheel.
I think they stuck with the design early and they assumed people were going to use it properly. It's not like you're swerving out of the lane. Yeah. But you definitely do have to give it a little bit of resistance.
Well, what if we just attach rockets to the car? Could we call it autopilot?
No, then we'd call it what's beyond ludicrous speed?
Something sold by Acme.
Yeah. Is this a real thing?
No.
Hold up.
No, it's a joke that he put on Twitter.
So are the flamethrowers.
Elon Musk.
The not flamethrowers.
June 9th, tweets, SpaceX option package for new Tesla Roadster will include 10 small rocket thrusters. Actually, about 10, he says. Small rocket thrusters arranged seamlessly around car. These rocket engines dramatically improve acceleration, top speed, braking, and cornering.
Braking? That means they fire in two directions?
Oh, at least two directions. Side directions, left and right, too. So the new Roadster, which they had at the they announced a while ago and they had at their annual shareholders meeting, mm-hmm. can go 0 to 60 in 1.9 seconds. They have a video which looks insane. And people have test ridden them, so it's a real product.
Slow.
0 to 60 in 1.9 seconds is, I cannot fathom
no.
the G-forces that you're feeling
mm-hmm.
unless you are a pilot, right?
Yeah.
And so, why would you need it faster? And two, why would you need to realize that it's to not, get it faster, yeah. you need to build in this rocket system?
I think it's more, in my mind, it's not about that 0 to 60. It's about the handling once you're traveling at speed. It keeps you...
stop it. Stop trying to
grounded.
No. Justify adding rockets to a car.
John Carmack responded to this tweet saying, for many maneuvers, it will probably be optimal to have the rockets pushing somewhat downward to increase tire grip.
This is a joke. Stop it.
Dude.
Stop it. Somebody's going to add a rocket to the car and put it out on YouTube.
Just tell me what type of rockets are we talking about?
Exactly. There's right. no carbon fuels in the rockets because this tweet thread goes on. He talks about it will all be compressed air.
So not rockets.
Well, I don't know. I mean, what is a rocket? let's see. What does he say?
So no combustion. These are electric cars.
Uh-huh.
They have compressors inside them, compressing air.
The rockets are pure electric, Elon says, with orbital rockets, which orbital rockets could be too. But there's no escaping Newton's third law.
That'll really change the experience of driving around in the quiet Tesla when the air compressor comes on every few minutes.
What PSI are we talking about to have a measurable effect?
To move a heavy car like that?
Right, it's a very heavy car like that, already in with acceleration in one direction.
Jeremy, is there still some rule called conservation of mass in this world?
Yep.
Conservation of momentum still apply?
Mm-hmm.
Oh, then I think he has some problems with his air compression plan. Now, for braking, that can work.
Oh, yeah, pushing it's braking the opposite direction?
You can use it as a pneumatic almost.
Jeez. Could you imagine braking super fast? That wouldn't be nearly as fun as acceleration.
I don't think any of this sounds like fun.
not unless you're on the closed course, the professional driver.
He's very thrilled about this car regardless. He talks about his first car that he, the supercar that he bought was the McLaren, was it the F1? Is that what they call it? I'm not a supercar guy.
F1.
And he thinks that is the perfect car. He says that is the best car ever, in his opinion. And
he makes cars.
And this car, the new Tesla Roadster, will be the successor to that. It will be the best car ever. And he doesn't expect a better car to ever be made.
What?
That's what he says.
Mm-hmm. Ever, quote unquote. Mm. Ever.
Mm-hmm.
Speaking of, they're not a flamethrowers are out in the wild.
That was a joke too, wasn't it?
Yeah, I mm-hmm. guess it was.
I think it's still a joke.
A 1,000 people were able to go pick up their not a flamethrower, take a photo op of using it to roast a marshmallow, mm-hmm. including friend of Tested, Frank Ippolito, mm-hmm. posting pictures of it. Though, props to Frank, he donated money to California Fund.
Wildfire Relief. Totally.
After purchasing one. So props to Frank for that.
And so did the Boring Company.
Yes.
$10,000.
I mean, these things are basically just, propane canisters combined with an airsoft gun. They're not, this magic idea. Can't call it a flamethrower because of California regulations. People are already doing stupid stuff in their backyards with them.
Sure. Screw in a propane tank.
They wrote roast marshmallows.
Pretty fast.
All right, let's talk about something real. Elon Musk's Boring Company has been approved to build a transit train between downtown Chicago and O'Hare Airport.
Which is great. I mean, if you've ever taken the blue line to O'Hare, usually takes about 45 minutes to get from downtown to the airport.
Yeah, and if you try driving during rush hour, forget it.
This would take, what, like 10 minutes or something like that?
Yeah. Yeah, and they're saying that these trains could leave potentially every 30 seconds.
These aren't big trains.
No, they only carry about 16 people. They're basically passenger cars. I don't even, and they're saying that it would cost less than taking, I guess, I don't know if they're saying the Blue Line or an Uber. I think they're saying Uber or Lyft. Less than the ride-sharing service. 10 seconds. Now, having lived in Chicago,
minutes.
10 minutes.
Second.
We're talking about some severe acceleration again.
That's the one with rockets. No, this is a big deal. If
what's the capacity?
About 16 people.
Per car. So how much? If you can load on cars. It's a multi-billion dollar project.
So how much per person charge to ride it?
Yeah, I don't know, maybe $30.
And at 16 people per car, I mean, Disney knows this is not an easy problem to solve. Mm-hmm. You're spending, it may be a 10-minute ride, but you're spending 2 hours in it.
What?
2 hours in the line.
Maybe.
I don't know. No, but you should be able to add cars pretty quickly to increase capacity.
Yeah, they're saying they depart like every 30 seconds.
That's a limitation. 16 people every 30 seconds, there you have your queue problem.
No, I don't see the math working out that way. How many people go to airports at once? A few thousand at a time?
I guess you could reverse engineer from how many flights are departing and the time it takes, and even at the busiest time.
Because they're not talking about also taking out the other mechanisms to get to the airport.
Then it needs to be premium. It needs to be tiered. See, capitalism needs to work.
I'm surprised that it isn't more expensive. But Elon said, like, the Rahm Emanuel said that it needs to cost as much as a ride-sharing service. But Elon's saying that it would cost way less, and I don't know how
what does it cost right now to go from downtown to airport.
Yeah, well, like I don't know, like a ride sharing service probably $30.
All right, so $30 for a 10-minute ride. Wait, and you book it ahead of time, so there's no queue, and you go to your time slot.
I don't know if you book it. Maybe
is he gonna try? He's not with this boring thing. He's not trying to pull a vacuum a little bit in this.
You mean
like with Hyperloop? The design.
They're saying that Hyperloop will not be a part of this.
Okay.
All right. That does it for technology news and Elon's shower this week. I want to thank the other sponsor of This Is Only a Test, and that's Radius from Thermacell, the world's first rechargeable zone mosquito repellent. With the Radius repeller, you can stop mosquitoes in flight, not on your skin, so you don't have to bother with messy, smelly, and oily sprays. The compact Radius repeller creates a 110-square-foot mosquito protection zone, and the secret is using the heat to disperse a highly effective scent-free repellent. It's push-button simple and features a rechargeable battery and a cartridge that offers 40 hours of protection, and you can use it anywhere, like in your backyard, campsite, picnic, or on vacation, and comes with a 100% satisfaction guarantee. So discover for yourself why Thermacell mosquito repellers are the highest-rated zone mosquito repellents. Go to thermacell.com and use the offer code TEST to get 20% off now. Again, that's thermacell.com with the offer code TEST to save 20%.
I'm a pinball nerd. Pin. Just to my point. Finally, pinball. That makes me very happy.
So we weren't planning to do a pinball moment here, but Kishore informed me about a huge event happening in the San Francisco Bay Area a week from this Saturday.
What's going on?
The Pacific Pinball Museum, which is a fave of all of ours. It maintains a lot of retro pinball games. Mm-hmm. And has a lot of events there where you can come in and play them, is having a surplus sale lot of games.
They have a warehouse filled with duplicates because so many people donate their games to this museum.
Nice.
Which is a wonderful thing, but they have run out of space apparently, and they need to raise funds anyway, so they are selling off the duplicates that they have. I know they have two or three of some games.
Most of the games are 1970s and older.
Oh, because some of the museum are earlier than that, old.
Well, those are a bit rarer.
So I think most of the ones we saw on the list were in the 60s, 70s kind of region.
Handful from the 80s.
Yeah, a lot of them are in conditions that need repair. Some of them are in good condition and priced affordably, given that.
I would say that the prices that I saw were market value or lower. So if they're doing a one-day sale, I mean, they have a lot of games on the market.
A lot of trucks being pulled up to the warehouse.
Yeah, I think the only concern I'd have is getting there early enough to push Jeremy out of the front of the line.
That's not going to be me, man. There's going to be a lot of people there early.
What would you have your eye on? Give us an example of a good 80s game that you'd covet.
Well, Kishore showed me the list. They have a Time Warp. Is that the name of the thing? What was the other one that you mentioned? Oh,
F1 Tomcat?
Yeah, F1 Tomcat's a great game. They have a few from the 80s. I don't know, you can get some great deals on the ones, like, well under $1,000 for the ones from the 70s, a few from the 60s. If you want a pinball machine, you're in the Bay Area, you always thought this would be fun. The problem is they come with no warranty, so you're going to maybe need some help maintaining
them. Are they even guaranteed to run?
No.
As is condition.
And I'll bet most of them won't be plugged in. You're not going to be trying these. You're going to be buying these and hoping for the best, going home, tinkering on them.
But if you're looking for a project,
it's a great, great fix-it hobby, because almost all these games are going to be, you know, so early that there's not going to be a whole lot of electronics in terms of, like, circuit boards. So you're just going to be tracing wires and, like, finding wires that detached and cleaning things. And it's, you know, if you like fixing things like old machines, this could be a fun hobby for you.
All right.
Where can they find more about it, Kishore?
If you go to the Pacific Pinball Museum's website, they have a link to the sale.
There you go.
Now it's time for a moment of science. All right, three stories this week. Guys, Mark Watney is really in a lot of fucking trouble on Mars.
Oh, no.
There is a big-ass storm on Mars, and there is trouble a-brewing.
What about the robots?
So Opportunity, which has been on Mars since 2007, initially had a 90-day mission, still running 12 years later. There were signs of a giant storm, largest storm in a decade that Opportunity has seen. Opportunity is charged by solar panels, so when a big dust storm comes, part of the problem is that it obscures the sun, so it loses the ability to charge itself. So we have a good news, bad news situation.
Okay.
NASA saw this coming, tried to take some steps in a similar way that they did the last time a storm came and hit Opportunity. They put it essentially in a mode where it was going to make contact every couple days, but essentially be in sort of a low power mode. The last time, you know, from when we're recording this podcast, that I know of that they made contact was Monday. And didn't make contact on its regular schedule afterwards, because at this point the temperatures are minus 20 degrees Celsius and the sun is completely obscured because of how big the storm is. And so they think it's gone into a low power default mode. And there is a not insignificant chance that Opportunity is done because it just won't be able to repower up once the storm comes off. And then, you know, who knows what condition Mark Watney's in to clear off the solar panels anyways.
That's my question. So will they not be able to reboot because the panels are caked?
I think it might just run out of power is why it won't be.
And the solar panels wouldn't be enough to recharge it?
No. Mm. I mean, it all depends on what has happened to it in the storm and how much that dust has obscured it. So we'll have to wait and see. There's a lot of people at NASA, JPL, that are cautiously optimistic. But this, I think this really testament that a 90-day mission is still going 12 years later.
Well, and to die in a Martian dust storm is a greater story than any of us will have.
Fair enough. Hey, I can't find it, but I used to have a map of Antarctica. You remember that old friendly map of Antarctica?
I do remember that. Oh, no, the red lines and everything.
All right, so let's look a quick geography lesson on Antarctica. There's essentially an east and west part of Antarctica. Both are covered with ice. The east part of Antarctica has a big amount of bedrock underneath it, and that bedrock has actually been pushing up a little bit. And because of climate change and warming, we're seeing more precipitation on the eastern shelf. It's just snowing more over there. And the scientists have come out with a study of how much ice is forming and losing on Antarctica. So on the east side, they're actually seeing an increase, a very slight increase, big error bars here, but they think about 5 gigatons of ice have formed in the past year on the eastern shelf. Hey, that's not bad. Mm-hmm. That means less sea level rise for us. The western shelf lost 220 billion tons of ice in the past year, which is three times the rate when they last took a look at this in 2012. Mm. So it is losing ice at the rate that is increasing sea level rise by basically, like, I don't know, it'll be, if it keeps going at this rate, something like 3 or 4 inches in the next 10 years, which is a real lot of water rise when you think about how many people live near coastal areas. So this is tremendously bad news because there is this big acceleration in loss of ice on the western part of Antarctica. Best reason we have for this is the western part of Antarctica doesn't have the bedrock underneath it, so the glaciers on that western shelf come in direct contact with the ocean. Ocean is warming, more contact with those glaciers, greater convection, loss of ice. It's not a very hard explanation of what's going on, but this number is well beyond expectations. If you read the actual study and the accompanying report from the scientists, they are scared shitless. They're like, they did not expect to see these numbers at this kind of level. And they said, unless like some pretty serious action is taken, the western part of Antarctica ice shelf is going to go away.
Why didn't they expect to see these numbers?
Well, because just the sheer acceleration. You can see like sort of a steadiness, and there hasn't been underlying temperature gains to associate to this steep of a curve. Because you would expect other indicators would follow to show that there would be this much acceleration, and they're just not, they weren't seeing it. This is a pretty big uptake. That doesn't mean this acceleration curve is going to keep going at its same rate, you know, next year, the year following, the year after that. That's always a little bit hard to predict. All they can go on is where we are now. The acceleration we're seeing is of deep cause of concern. And the last story has a relation to Curb Your Enthusiasm. Yeah. Norm story this week.
This is interesting. There's an episode in Curb Your Enthusiasm called The Anonymous Donor. And it's Larry David in the show makes a donation to a charitable organization.
I think it's the NRDC, and he makes it anonymously.
No, he doesn't make it anonymously. Ted Danson makes it anonymously. And then the whole episode's about the psychology of making anonymous donations. And apparently there's research as to why the anonymous donation really has more value than making a donation that's not anonymous.
A value to whom?
A value to the
donor.
The donor.
What?
Because to truly make an anonymous donation, no one has to know about it. And yet they are known. Someone knows about it. The recipients know who it is and mark it as anonymous. And you get the extra value of saying that you didn't want the credit, which comes back, and which was the whole point of the episode.
Yeah.
Larry David didn't know that he could have made the donation anonymously and gotten more credit because of, you know, his character flaws.
So anonymous donations aren't anonymous, you're saying?
Essentially. Someone knows.
Are you saying that it creates a buzz?
And exactly.
People want to know.
People want to know. And when they do find out, you get, then it defeats the point, and you get the extra bonus of like, oh, so generous, so extra generous. You made it anonymously.
You're so modest.
Exactly. Yeah.
This is a science story on humble brag, basically.
Exactly. Yeah.
I love
Sweet.
It. I love it.
Humble brag is real.
This only counts with substantial donations, though, right? Like, if I make an anonymous $20 donation, I'm not going to get extra credit, am I?
That's a good point. And the point of the Nautilus story was in the research, and I'm sure if they did the research or, but there was a paper about the signals that that you're sending, and it's like match. It's like a game theory game of matchmaking the anonymous, the donors and the recipients, and whether you want how to get the most social benefit out of it. I thought it was fascinating, and that episode has always been hilarious. And if you think about it, yeah, you put it very succinctly, Kishore. It is about the value of the humble brag.
Kishore, before we end this segment, I want to give you a question.
Uh-oh.
I feel like there should be a Q&A period in the science section every week. And my son and I were having a discussion. Maybe you know the answer to this. If you're traveling at the speed of sound.
Sure.
And you make a sound. Does that sound go forward at twice the speed of sound?
Relative to what?
Or can you, how does that
work? All right, so there's two different ways to interpret this question. So if you're traveling at the speed of sound, you can't be traveling in an open cockpit. You have to be traveling in some sort of protected atmospheric shell. And sound works only through the medium it travels in. Like, there's no such thing as sound in the vacuum of space because there's no way for that resonance to actually propagate. Mm-hmm. So if you're in a fighter jet that's traveling faster than the speed of sound and you speak, you're in a protected area. And so the sound moves through the medium. So even though you are physically traveling relative to the Earth at that speed, you would still hear the sound.
Isn't that because how warp works? Like, they create a bubble around you within which, so you never travel faster than light speed?
Well, kind of. You're bending space and
you're
time.
You're bending. That's about bending the space around in front of you and moving it behind you and collapsing that space.
The easiest way to think about this is you can hear me.
Yeah.
Right? Mm-hmm. We are traveling, what, 20-some thousand miles an hour right now through space? Just around the sun. Mm-hmm. That doesn't include how we're moving through the Milky Way.
Right.
But you can still hear me.
Mm-hmm.
So we're traveling faster than the speed of sound in an absolute way. So it's the reference that matters here. So now if you're traveling in an open cockpit and you're traveling the speed of sound, you're going to have a bad time.
So speed is always relative.
Well, forget the me talking part then. What about the sound of the engines of the craft that is traveling at the speed of sound? They do not travel forward?
They do propagate through the medium still, but you will not hear them in the same way because you're traveling faster than the propagation through that medium.
Mm-hmm. So I cannot hear them.
No, and it's complicated in the sense that you're sitting inside that craft, so some of that vibration is going to come through the craft itself.
I mean, if I were outside the craft.
If you're outside the craft, no.
I couldn't hear them. That's interesting.
No, you would hear them, just not until the craft is farther away from you.
As long as I stayed at the pace of the craft, I would not hear them.
Right.
Yeah, yeah. All right. Thank you. Let's do this more often.
Sure. Is the red that I see the same as the red you see?
No, it is not. Oh. It's because we're in an AI movie right now, starring Thomas Middleditch.
The VR Minute. Virtual reality this week.
All right, back to E3, going full circle. Now, there wasn't a massive VR presence, but there were a few VR games. We mentioned earlier that PlayStation had an array of VR titles for PSVR, some of which don't even have release dates yet. Let's go through a few of those. We'll talk about them more in depth and show some interviews and footage from projections.
Mm-hmm.
We played Tetris Effect.
Yes, that got a little bit of buzz before the show. And it is coming out. It's exclusive to PSVR at the moment. And it is basically Tetris.
Tetris.
I did not get the sense that this required VR. And to that point, it doesn't require VR.
It doesn't. You can play it on a flat screen. What VR adds in that game, unlike a game like Super Hypercube, where you're looking at a three-dimensional object and looking around it, this one is just Tetris. But it is 3D in the sense that the effects that play with the music is a music Tetris game. The effects are all around you and come at you.
There's a phenomenon called the Tetris effect, and there's a book written about it, and you've all experienced it, whether it's GTA or Beat Saber. If you play a game long enough, you end up seeing these things after you stop playing the game.
Yeah.
And you can't stop imagining it. When you go to bed and you close your eyes, you see it.
Yeah.
So they are playing off that, and they wanted to intensify that effect and make you get in the zone even more so.
When you mentioned Tetris, I thought it was going to be you are the blocks now.
Whoa,
and you have to move from that perspective.
I like it. I like that game.
Now, I don't mean to diss it by saying it doesn't require VR. It actually looks like a pretty great version of Tetris, but it doesn't require VR.
Some other games that we saw at the PlayStation booth that do you feel like they require VR, made specifically with VR in mind. There are two games, one called the Ghost Giant and the other, the Squanch games from Justin Roiland, Trover Saves the Universe.
Mm-hmm.
And both of these are interesting in that they had characters interact with you, look at you, make eye contact, narrative games, lots of dialogue. And both were fun in their own ways, and we'll show some footage that we shot and some interviews we did with developers there. Played a little more of Blood and Truth, which is from London Studio. That's the big AAA shoot 'em up.
It's been in development for a while now.
Yeah, they did PSVR Worlds, and then they picked the segment of Worlds, the London Heist, that was the most exciting, and turned that into a full game. And that game, I think the problem I have with it as of right now is the hardware.
What do you mean? There's PSVR in
PSVR just does not feel as good.
Yeah. Well, it's a shooting game. So are you concerned about the floatiness of the controllers?
Yeah, exactly.
Yeah.
And ergonomics of the controllers.
To me, it's a rails shooter. Now, granted, you control when you advance and where, you know, at what point you progress on that rail.
Yep.
But at the same time, it's just node-based teleportation without...
You know, which I'm fine with. I like the idea of a time crisis in VR. And I just want to...
Yeah, it's a good point.
Do a shooting gallery.
It feels like an arcade game. I mean, it really feels like something where you want to drop coins in to continue.
Yeah, yeah. And then outside the PlayStation booth, we played... I played Echo Combat for the first time.
Yeah, well, we both played it. It was your first time in there. Oh, my God. What do you think?
I loved it. I want to go back for more.
Mm-hmm.
I can't wait. That is one word.
Is there different modes, or is it all that goal based? Like you push
that's what
the
they're
thing
showing
to
right
the
now.
Target.
We're not ready to discuss additional modes, but it's something we're definitely thinking about.
Was what they said.
They also released a preview. So in this preview, you're essentially taking a protected item and pushing it to a target, and the other team is trying to prevent you from getting it.
Yeah, escort mode, minecart, right? Except in this case, it's an inflatable flamingo. In space.
Minecart.
Zero G.
That's a TF2 reference.
That's a TF2 reference.
Oh, man.
That's right.
Yeah.
A lot of fun. I want to go back. They're doing a beta, public beta, at the end of this month. So if you have a Rift, you should...
A week from today.
Yeah, that's right.
What did
you
think of the design of the space? Because it's a slightly different design than
the... I love how many walls there are, and I love how big and expansive.
Because you got to take cover. A lot.
Yeah, there is quite a bit of cover, it seemed like.
And they revealed two additional tools. They had already, in the initial beta of a couple weeks ago, they had all three guns, but now they have two ordnances, grenades. The new one is a stun grenade, which I didn't try, but you did.
Yeah.
And when you throw it,
has
you don't...
an area of effect.
You don't detonate it.
No.
It just passes through people, and if the area effect passes through you, you're
stunned.
Stunned for a few seconds, a couple seconds.
Yeah.
And the other new thing is a new TAC mod. So we already had heal and we had see-through walls.
Shield.
And now it's a shield, that's right. It's like a physical shield that you can plant in place and then hide behind.
The beauty of Echo Arena is being able to use the other players to your advantage. You can launch yourself off other players.
Yeah.
You can launch yourself off the walls. You can still use all of those mechanics in Echo Combat.
Except blocking your head. You can't. Well, there's no physical combat.
Yeah, there's no hitting people's head.
Yeah.
Mm-hmm. So you can still, move through the world that way. And I haven't, you didn't see a whole lot of that in the beta, but it's going to be a good thing to learn.
Yeah.
I actually jumped, because I had such a good time in combat, I actually jumped back into Echo Arena for like the first time this year.
Mm-hmm.
Last night, I'm level like 16. I got accidentally matched with level 50s, which is like, I think where it caps out. So there were two level 50s on my team and three on the other team. And I was just, they were using terminology I didn't understand. They had techniques I didn't understand. Like one guy came up to me and he said, push me. And I said, what do you mean? Because you can't push people. And so I literally tried to push him. He's like, that's not what I meant. Like
this is a nightmare scenario. Like waking up in a nightmare, you're taking a final exam for math class.
Were you,
again.
Yeah. Were you like one of the NPCs on the Matrix? Watching, Trinity and Neo fly over you? Is that what
basically,
it felt like?
Basically.
Let the agent take over my body now.
Yeah, it was pretty dismal. We managed to pull out a win, but not due to me.
Ooh. All right. Budget Cuts is released. It's out.
Yeah, it came out today.
That's I didn't even realize.
I think they announced it yesterday. And today's the day. So hopefully, I would assume they squashed a lot of the bugs, if not all of them. And I'm so glad that they did that. I'm glad that they delayed the game because it needed a little extra attention. And I think people are going to really enjoy it. We should take another look at
it. Yeah, I need an update. We haven't done a full review yet, but I was waiting for the patches to get fixed. And then I will jump back in and play it and we'll talk about it. Hey, did you see, was this Lowe's or
it was Lowe's.
There was a video.
The home improvement store Lowe's.
Yeah. And they have a VR lumberyard simulator now.
You can try in stores.
Using the Vive. You wear a Vive. You have pucks in your hands. So you have a little bit of hand presence there, and you hold a virtual chainsaw, and you do some gardening in VR.
What are you talking about?
This is a real thing.
They released a video that shows people using the Vive to test out, you know, garden tools around their around virtual houses, so you can get a feel for what they will actually do. And it seems totally ridiculous, because it is. But it's very sincere. And their whole pitch is that people don't know what exactly these tools are designed for, or don't have confidence with them. So this is a way to do it safely without investing in buying the tools. It seems ridiculous to me. I think Simpsons the funniest part is the Simpsons did it. They predicted this back, it was like season 8, season 9. They had Garden Tool Simulator.
Yard Work Simulator.
And part of this is that the Simpsons predicts everything, and so something is bound to stick, but they legitimately nailed this. And Simpsons has done a bunch of VR based a prediction. So we'll see what comes true.
If you have an Oculus Go and you use it for media consumption and watch things like 3D movies, something you should definitely try out is the new Henry encoding. Henry was the animated short film that was at part of Oculus Story Studio, no longer making films, now defunct. And John Carmack took the rendering of Henry and then hard-coded it into a new format, a video format, not an interactive format. So this is a 5K by 5K VR playback.
Wait, but is this it? Is this it, the one that you have linked to?
It's in the Go store.
Because it's you linked to a Gear VR.
It's in Gear. It's for experience. Gear VR and Go.
Oh, it does work on Gear VR?
Yeah. Huh. Yeah. So it's a pre-rendered version.
Yeah.
But it's his way of showing the quality you can get on something like the Gear VR or the Go for 5K by 5K video, the best image quality. Now, I think they cheat a little bit because it's a CG sequence, and in my experience, CG sequences look more convincing, and you see less dithering and less
You can get a perfect render.
Exactly.
You don't have to stitch.
And videos, you not only do you see the seam between the stitches, you get a lot of compression artifacts. But this is based on, you know, this is something he's been pushing for a long time. And
I can't believe this is out already.
Yeah.
Cool. So it says it's only 1 meg, but it must do an internal download. It must be a huge file.
Yeah. Oh, yeah. Oh, yes.
I wonder how big
absolutely.
It is.
And this is stereoscopic at 60 FPS.
Yeah. Well, 180, right?
180, yes.
Yeah. Cool.
Yeah. So worth trying out. I think that does it for the VR Minute. And that might do it for the podcast. Do we want to do one more segment, or are you guys?
I'm good.
I was just going to shout out, if you're in the Bay Area, Monday night, I'm screening Apollo 13.
Hey, good timing.
At your house?
No, at the Alamo Draft House part of my monthly big screen science, where we screen science films. But more importantly, next month, Wrath of Khan and a movie I like to call 2001 in 70 millimeter.
It's a good name.
Yeah. Not so bad. So hopefully a few people will come out.
Awesome. I'm going to do a road trip this weekend. Minor road trip. Just going to North Bay, try to max out the mileage or the range.
Are you still having some anxiety?
I just want to test.
Nice.
I want to see whether I will get anxiety.
You should really do it. You should do a 300-mile trip.
I will do the drive to L.A. I already planned out my stops. Casa de Fruta on 152 down the 101 has a supercharger. And in Kettleman City has the lounge.
Sounds good.
All right, there we go. That's it for this week on This Is Only a Test. Thanks for listening. Do we have an outro this week?
We do. This one's from Kerber.
Hi there, I didn't see you.
If you have a question, you can send it to podcast@tested.com, and we'll answer it on the air, maybe, or possibly it'll just sit in an email kind of languishing zone and age for a few years before finally gets deleted.
Where does that email go?
I get those emails.
Yeah? Is it languishing?
There are a few coming occasionally. Yeah. We can open it back up if you guys want.
Ask us questions.
Ask questions. podcast@tested.com. Do it.
You know, there's an Easter egg in The Last of Us 2. trailer.
Oh, yeah?
That 30-minute long thing or 45-minute long thing.
Wait. Last of Us Part 2, it's 11 minutes long.
Is that as long as it was?
Yeah, it felt like 40 minutes long.
Yeah, there's an Easter. I haven't seen it, many people report on it, but if you pause it at just the right frame, you can see two girls kissing.
What?
Yeah.